each client was a completely different product, different perspective, different countries, different ways of working, different tech. It was the learning experience was amazing.
Welcome to the What is UX podcast, the show where we interview design leaders about their journey and experience so that you may learn from them. I'm your host, Peck Pong Pat. On this episode, we have Premika Posaw from GovTech Singapore. So she's the UX lead there, and we're actually talking from the other side of the world. So good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invite.
Thank you. Yeah. So tell us about GovTech Singapore for those of us, you know, who probably have no idea.
Okay. So GovTech is an agency. Uh-huh. Set up by the government to handle the digital services for the government.
Got it. And you're the UX lead there. How many UX designers?
I'm one of the UX leads because it's a very large agency. They're like 2,500 employees.
Oh, wow.
And they have to cater to a lot of ministries and a lot of stat boards. So I'm one of the UX leads there, yeah.
Got it. And so who do you design for?
So we have a couple of products. I've actually been seconded to the Ministry of Manpower, and there are a couple of products there. One of our products is Work Passes for Foreigners. That's a very large, complex product. The second one is a financial digital service. The third one is My Career's Future, which is basically a platform for job seekers and employers. So citizens and employers can connect on that platform. And then we have another product called a Career Coach, which basically helps people think about the progress of their careers, regardless of which stage you're at. So you could be a fresh graduate, you could be a mature employee, you could be thinking of changing jobs, you could have been retrenched. You can actually go to these people and get some advice and concrete steps on how to move forward on your career path.
Amazing. So I didn't realize the government, Singaporean government, provided so many awesome services and digital versions of them. So you're designing web apps, mobile apps, I presume. And
yep, it's actually the whole range. A lot of it is service design because we have a lot of touch points other than just the app. But correct. This is what I see. This is what I think of UX as well, right? I don't think UX is just a website or an app, right? Yeah. UX is the entire experience. Mm-hmm. So from the point that a citizen is thinking about, let's say, a job, to how easily they can find their way to the website, how easy it is to get information, get help, upload their resumes, tweak stuff that they need to tweak, talk to different people, get the employment, talk to the other employees, get support. So it's like the whole experience. It's not just, you know, the digital touch point.
Right, right. It's a whole, so you do your user research, you're trying to find what everything that they're doing, not just kind of online.
Yeah, we talk a lot to people. We do a lot of user research to find out what the needs are. Because in tech, you get really excited about stuff that you can do. And you create all these features and these products, which are amazing, but not useful.
Right, or not used. Yeah, not useful
not
or not used.
Yeah.
What percentage of the Singaporean citizens then would you say use the services you work on?
Well, you know, government e-services are a lot of the e-services are monopolies. So, for example, the work passes, if you need to apply for a work pass,
you have to, yeah.
In your company, there's nowhere
else. That's it.
Right, yeah. But there are other services like My Career's Future and Career Coach, which are not mandatory services.
Right, yeah. So in some ways, you design a suite of tools and products for the entire citizenry.
Of Singapore. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a small population, so there's a lot of good stuff that we can do, and there's a lot of people that we can talk to improve the products. So it's a good space at the moment.
Yeah. Let's go back a little bit and start much earlier. So yeah, give us a little bit about your background. Where were you born? Where did you grow up? And how did you end up here?
This is a question I ask myself often. How did I end up here? Okay, so basically I grew up in India, in Calcutta. normal, happy childhood. I had an older sister, went to school, came back, did a lot of sports, played a lot, did a lot of fun things. Regular childhood, I would say. And then I did college and university in India as well. And then came to Singapore for work. And it was always, okay, I'm going to be here a year. Okay, I'm going to be here 2 years. Okay, in 3 years' time, this is it. I'm leaving. And it's been like 20 years.
20 years later.
20 years later, I'm, oh, wow, I'm here.
And yeah, you can't go back anymore. You're used to it.
Too used to it. Love it. Singapore's a very easy place live in. It's hard to give up.
I always, for people who say, oh, I've never been to Asia, I always say, go to Singapore first. It's like Asia light.
It really is. It gives you the soft landing intro to Asia.
Yeah. From there, maybe you can try maybe Malaysia, Thailand, Bali before you go a little more rough.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah. Okay. And then in terms of your work, I saw that you had quite a lot of agency backgrounds.
Yeah. So my work, okay. So my career has been, it's not linear at all. Like it's just gone all over the place. So I would say I've been lucky enough to explore every opportunity that I've wanted to. I've never had that pressure of, no, you have to be somewhere at a certain stage and this is the path that you need to follow. So I actually started off as a Forex dealer. That was like my first job.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was because it was the US markets and I was based in Singapore. I used to work at night and sleep all day. So I did that for like 2 years. And then I was like, okay, no, I'm not feeling this. Not happening. I'd always been interested in design and advertising. So I actually wanted to be a copywriter when I was younger. But I started off in design. And then from design, I transitioned. So from graphic design, I transitioned into advertising and then spent a bulk of my career in advertising as a creative art director. And then in about 2015, you know, this whole digital transformation thing was happening and banking, insurance, advertising were seeing huge cuts in budget. And there was a lot of turmoil and transition. So at that point, I decided to do my master's in a school called Hyper Island. It is the most amazing school that you would ever find anywhere, ever. So basically, it's this Swedish school, and they combine technology, creativity, and business, right? So wow. They give you a good base with which to start off in. I actually did it part-time while working full-time at Ogilvy. I was global creative director at Ogilvy at that point.
Oh, wow.
And what the school does is they're very clever. What they do is that they don't separate school from work. So all your projects were work-based projects, you know, so it's not that, okay, I have to switch off and work on a separate project. It's impossible. If you're working full-time and you're studying part-time, it was a very clever way to kind of meld the whole, user experience was amazing.
Like I think people learn better with hands-on work versus kind of theoretical book, you know, studying.
Yeah. One of the tenets was learning by doing.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was actual project-based work. I got involved the people at work as well. And they got pretty excited about some of the projects. So yeah, so I did my master's in, what was it in? I think it was digital media management. And then I quit. I was like, this has been amazing. I quit. Okay.
You quit Ogilvy when you were...
I quit Ogilvy, yeah.
Yeah.
I was
You also glossed over that a little bit. You just kind of like, oh yeah, I was a global director at Ogilvy. Like, how did you get there? That's a pretty big position there.
Okay, I was regional. I worked on some regional products in Saatchi and Saatchi. So yeah, so it was a number of design jobs. And then I think my first advertising agency was actually an agency called Beatty Ads. Beatty Ads was at that time the epitome of advertising because Ian Beatty was the one who had created the Singapore Girl for Singapore Airlines.
Oh.
So that was the agency to be in. It was like super exciting, super cool, great stuff. And then fast forward to, I was working on a couple of regional products with Saatchi and Saatchi. I was based in Bangkok for 6 months at that time working with Procter & Gamble. So it was like, it was Olay. A couple of beauty products and Olay. And then I was there for like maybe 3.5 years, picked up a lot of experience working with regional teams, both creatively as well as business-wise, as well as dealing with the folks at P&G and learning the ways that they thought and how the roadmaps and how they'd move forward. And then I got an opportunity to work at Ogilvy in a global capacity as global creative director, again on with Unilever, and it was beauty products again. So I was there for like maybe a year. And then after I did my master's and I was like, okay, I need something a little bit more than a beauty products, which are, yeah. The
Olay and then, yeah.
Olay, yeah, it's like face cream. Yeah, it's not life-threatening if you don't really work on beauty products. So also hyperallergenic changes the way you think a little bit, right? You start questioning your purpose. How are you spending your time? What value are you bringing to the world? Like, what would you like to be doing 5 or 10 years down the line? I definitely didn't want to be working on face cream for no longevity. And then, so I said, okay, let me quit and think about really how I want to move forward. And then again, it was serendipity, right? So then I had a friend who approached me. He runs an enterprise omni-channel product, which basically is software that helps companies, retail companies, to do everything from sales inventory to CRM to everything. Basically, it's like the whole range of services. And he came to me and said that he'd like some UX done for his digital product. And I was too busy at the time. And I recommended a couple of people. And he came back and he said, listen, I'm not happy. Can you just please do it for me? And that was actually my first client, just serendipity, right? And then after I got my first client, that client introduced me to another enterprise software client, which was basically an e-commerce company starting out in India. So they wanted to build out an e-commerce. And it was very interesting because basically they had sugar mills. Okay, look at the situation. They had sugar mills and they had cracked the last mile delivery problem, which is the main problem for most of e-commerce, right? So they had cracked the system and they were like, why don't we have e-commerce for rural India rather than having it for urban India? So that was an amazing product as well. And then I just kept getting referrals, and then I had to start my own agency because it was getting too big for me to, it wasn't sustainable. So I started an agency called Jumpstart Asia, which had, the next client we got was a global aviation infotech company. So designing for them also was, so each client was a completely different product, different perspective, different countries, different ways of working, different tech. It was the learning experience was amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah. You kept leveling up and you were able to take on the challenge. How big did you grow your agency to?
So I had 3 or 4 major clients, and then we had maybe a team of UI, UX, which were between 15 and 20 people. But we also had a model where they were project-based. So my model was flexible. I didn't have maybe like a couple of people full-time, and then the rest of the people were remote. So I had some people from Vietnam, some people from India. So it was within the region, worked remote, and did it on a project basis.
Yeah. How long did you do that for?
4 years, 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I lucked out with GovTech. Like, I got an opportunity and I spoke to them and it just worked out. So I was like, okay, this is an opportunity to... the last year, I think we had started seeing global recession. And the murmurings of COVID, and I could tell that it was going to get a little bit difficult. So when the GovTech opportunity came about, it was really hard to give up your own agency and actually go from the private sector to the public sector. That's one. And then go from being your own agency to working in a corporate organization.
Yeah. Some people would say the biggest when you're talking about government, that's probably the biggest you can go in terms of bureaucracy and corporate.
Greatest leap of faith.
Yeah.
No regrets. I love it. Love my job. Love the products. Love the purpose and the value and the meaning. There are many opportunities to do things that you wouldn't be able to do. The products impact a lot of people in a lot of good ways. So yeah, I would say I'm in a good state.
Yeah, there's not many people who can say they design for the whole country, right? Like even when you design for a large company, you know, you design for a portion of a subset of people, you know, a segment of people who use your products. But yeah, if you're designing like the passports or work permits, that's everyone.
And you get a lot of visibility, which helps you. You know, sometimes you work on projects and you don't get visibility on every facet. Over here, you get visibility, so you can really think about how to improve the product in the fastest possible way.
Well, tell us what good design looks like at GovTech.
So a lot of the products are mature products. So the ones that I work on, I would say the good design for me is when it becomes seamless. Mm-hmm. Right? When people are not struggling to figure out which way to go or what do I do or what's next. So it's really when there are no barriers and then there's no friction and there are no pain points. Okay, this is ideal situation. And yeah, that's the best design possible. But that for me is good design. When you can use the product seamlessly without having to pick up the phone or to send an email or to look at a how-to guide. That, I would say, is the epitome of good design. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the design process there. We'd love to learn.
How much time do you have? Okay, let me break it down into something that's easy to talk about. Okay, so one of the products is in the, let's say, the discovery phase. Uh-huh. So for the work passes, it's a legacy system. And we're transitioning the product into a new system. So we have to do it phase by phase and shift the old system into the new system. The latest product is we're shifting the work passes over into the new system. So the exciting bit now is that we're in the discovery and research phase. So we have the luxury of time where we can actually talk. So there are a couple of users for the system. So you have the Ministry of Manpower users, who are the internal users. So I also need to push a lot on their behalf, because the tendency is to say that the internal users, the design doesn't have to be so good, mm-hmm. right? I'm like, yes, but isn't user experience for everyone? Just because it's not public facing, you need to have a good user experience for the Ministry of Manpower employees as well. In fact, I would say those were your most important users, right? Because they should be facing the least friction and having the best experience. So it's them as well as the public face. So public facing, I would say, are like EAs and HRs. So for example, the HR people who work at a company, large organization, like any large organization, like Deloitte or Google or Apple, they all have to go through the same system. So we're fortunate that we can do user research, really talk to them about what are the documents, for example, that you need to get together. Is it easy to find out all the documents that you need to put together? Is it easy to upload? So, you know, you really get down to the basics, because sometimes some of the research, we've been hearing people say that we need to get together four documents, but then we have to go to four different places at different times in the process to upload the documents. So what some people did was they just uploaded all four documents at all four places, mm-hmm. right? So that's not a good user experience.
No.
It's terrible for both sides, right?
Yeah.
Because the MOM people then need to go through the PDFs and take out the relevant ones and have a look at it.
Right. It's a bad experience for them too.
All around bad experience. Yeah. The good part is that we have the time to do the user research. We tweak the design process. We do usability testing. We go back to them. We talk to them about it, fix the design process, and then move on to the next stage. So that's an ideal design process. When you have the time and the luxury and you're in the discovery phase and you can actually go through these steps before starting the actual design work, which is the wireframes and prototypes of the product.
How often are projects ideal? Coming from agency, I think, you know, you and I both know what's going on here.
I gave you the glossy version. Let's just stay with the beautiful glossy version. Well, I would say 50%.
Yeah,
which is quite high, actually. Yeah, you do get a lot of opportunity to polish the product. And there is a lot of the product that is, you just have to go.
Yeah,
you just like, okay, no, we don't have time. Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you for that. I mean, I think it's a truer, lots of design students coming out of school, they always want to try to follow the design process in as much as they can. And then, you know, when you hire young kids out of school, we always kind of almost have to break them into like the real world. Sometimes it's like, well, you know, if it takes 2 weeks, you know, if the startup wants it done in 2 weeks, but you, it's not going to have user research, it's not going to have a lot of stuff, or like very bare bones, or, you know, whatever. Yeah.
User research does get sacrificed in a lot of fast-paced projects.
Cool. What was some of the proudest projects that you worked on and you feel proud of?
This is a very tough question. Okay, I wouldn't say proudest, because I think all the products are pretty good and we're constantly trying to improve them. I would say most engaging, one of the most engaging projects that I really enjoyed was that we're thinking now of ways to, so technological disruption plus a digital transformation plus an added layer of COVID, right, has resulted in a lot of economic turmoil, let's say, right? So there's a lot of retrenchments. There are a lot of people thinking about, okay, how do we sustain the economy? How do we get the right jobs to the right people? How do we connect Singaporeans and PRs to meaningful and gainful employment? So we had a blue sky study. I love blue sky studies because that means you can do whatever you like, okay? It's go forth and do whatever you like. Do the research, look at best in class, look at global companies, look at local companies, and try and propose what we called it was the ideal job platform of the future. So what would the ideal job platform of the future look like? What would it look like for a job seeker? What would it look like for the employer? What is the longevity? What are the different perspectives and aspects that we need to look at? So the really interesting part of this is, because of my advertising background, I wasn't looking at it. I looked at it holistically. So we looked at things like how people needed to be, both people, job seekers, as well as employers, needed to become objects of desire. In advertising, this is the thing. You need to be an object of desire, right? So yeah, so suppose you're not a first-tier company. So, okay, if you're Apple, Google, you're not going to have a problem finding people who want to join you, right? But 97%, I would say, I hope the figure's right, but 97% of employers are SMEs in Singapore. Yeah. Small SMEs, right? So they need to have some way of conveying their desirability. Like, why would I want to join you when I've never even heard of you?
Right.
So this is one aspect that we explored. Like, how do we make both the people as well as the employers objects of desire, right? Then we had to think about, okay, what are the design objectives? What are the principles behind the platform? Then we had to think about, okay, mindset change, right? You have to think about, the world has changed. So now it's not just about what are my hard skills. It's like, what are your critical thinking skills? How resilient are you? How nurturing are you? How willing are you to look after other people and step in when they're in trouble? So we had to really think about holistic picture, as well as, okay, now what is best in class? And then we have to think about, okay, now if it's a government product, how do we align policy intentions with public services and connect it to consumer needs? Mm-hmm. Right? So you have to think about that whole journey. And then how do we, the other thing was that we have two things that we think about. We have something called My Career's Future, which is employment. And then we have something called My Skills Future. So My Skills Future is also an amazing product where basically you have training courses or skills that you can learn online or offline, which is heavily, heavily subsidized by the government. So you can upskill, reskill in any area that you'd like to, and very easily and very inexpensively. At the current moment, the platforms are separate. So how do we make a unified user journey for the citizen or the user so that they don't have to go to two separate places when they're thinking about skills and employment, which are actually very closely related?
Right. You want to tie them together. So if they want to work at a certain company, that position, they might, these are the skills that you need, or yeah, if they talk to each other, you can tie that all together.
So ideally, AI.
So that's a big project, right? I mean, it sounds like you have two disparate systems. So like a technical project is just tying the two projects, the two tools together. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to get the philosophy. We have to unite the philosophy and then unite the policies and then unite the tech. Because the databases, for example, how do you unite the databases? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Then, and how do you unite two separate tech systems? Yeah, it's very complex, but it is a blue sky project. So yes, there were recommendations on how to do it, but we got a lot of freedom to explore, which I really enjoyed doing that. So now it's in the stage of discussing how to make it.
Okay. What did you come up with? Can you talk about it?
No.
No.
Sorry. No, not yet.
Yeah. But it's cool. Yeah, it's cool to be able to work on something meaningful that then you can help everything from, you know, like the 97% SMEs to the people job seeking. Because if they're, you know, the citizenry are only looking at the Apples and the Googles, they're missing out on so much opportunity. Yeah.
And not everybody can get a job at Apple and Google. So you have to understand that, look, you're not going to get an Apple or a Google. And if you're not an Apple or a Google, not everybody's going to be wanting to work with you. Yeah. So how do you become an object of desire? Like, how do you bump yourself up both sides, job seeker and employer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How can a small agency or a small SME like myself give us some tips?
Become an object of desire?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was very interesting. We had a lot of design thinking workshops, which were super fun.
Yeah.
Right. Where we went through the process and came up with a whole bunch of really interesting ideas. So one thing, again, that we learned from advertising as well is that peer recommendations, the number one way that people get jobs or try new products or get introduced to brands. Right. So for a SME, if you can get people who already work for you, or people who have worked for you, kind of spread the word about what an amazing company you are and how amazing the culture is. That's one way to go forward. Another one was for their websites, which people went to explore, to have a lot more information on that about, I mean, it could be short videos on people talking about their experiences or a day in the life of, or what is meaningful or brings value to you every day. But you have to put a human face on it. The issue is that you employers need to be more human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In order for people to connect and resonate with you. Yeah.
Yeah. I think people want to connect. Yeah, they don't want to connect with they want to connect with other people. They want to connect with authenticity and authentic brands and human brands. Yeah.
Yeah.
And people behind them. Yeah.
Yeah. And HR, even though I think HR is amazing, but HR isn't always human.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need somehow to give people that human connect with your organization. Yeah.
Well, that implies like content, and it's like an SME is already, sometimes that's the last thing you have time for, right? Content, marketing, and telling stories.
But it could be really quick, easy, simple content.
Yeah.
Like people overthink it. So that's the other thing. You think, oh my God, I'm going to put out content. The branding needs to be amazing. The quality needs to be fantastic. The production values need to be really high. So yeah, we are thinking about programs in how to shoot and produce content quick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like maybe, yeah, tools or recommendations for the SMEs as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you. Yeah, this was amazing. I learned quite a lot, and it was really fun.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed that.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of What is UX? If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. If you leave us a review, I'll make sure to shout it out on the show. If you have any questions, send them to questions@whatisux.co, and our guest and I will try to answer them on the show. And you can always find us on whatisux.co. See you on the next one.